And now to the search for the perfect recipe. Any chance that your menu today includes sardine on toast sorbet, mango and Douglas fir puree, or for dessert, nitrogen scrambled eggs and bacon ice cream? Well, no, not in our house either. But those are some of the dishes at the famous Fat Duck restaurant. In 2005, the Fat Duck was voted the best restaurant in the world by Restaurant Magazine, and it sports the maximum 3 stars in the Michelin Guide. The Fat Duck is about an hour outside of London along the M4 motorway in the village of Bray in Berkshire, England. And there, in the kitchen of his modest country house, you'll find the Fat Duck's chef and owner, Heston Blumenthal. Now, after 11 years of experimenting with food from a scientific, some might say bizarre approach, Heston Blumenthal is on a new journey. He wants to find the perfect recipe for simple classic dishes like pizza, steak, and fish and chips. Well, we invite you to join in. When you make your comfort food classic, what makes yours special? What makes it perfect? Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Heston Blumenthal is with us from the studios of the BBC in Chelmsford, England. Nice to have you on the program today.
It's because he speaks bloody slow.
Mr. Blumenthal.
Yes.
Ah, welcome, and nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Ah, hi, Neil. How are you doing?
Very well. And I have to...
I'm just going to say happy Thanksgiving.
Well, a very different holiday here than it, and of course, it's not even celebrated there.
No.
I never understood why. Maybe it's because that's the place they came from. Anyway, I have to begin by saying this search for these are really comfort foods that you're writing about, very different from what you serve in the Fat Duck restaurant.
Yes, very different. What was interesting is when we looked at this, there were dishes that we've kind of grown up with in Britain and made our own. And in a couple of instances, there are dishes where we've taken the original authentic and we've changed it over like a 20, 30-year period into something that, in the case of Black Forest Gâteau, is actually nowhere near as nice as the original one was.
Well, gâteau, of course, is the universal English word for what we call in America cake.
Cake, that's correct.
And what corrupted Black Forest cake?
Well, The original combination, the mixture of wonderful chocolate, great cherries, delicately scented with kirsch, and a little bit of lightly whipped cream, is a marriage made in heaven. Now, over the years, what we've managed to do in Britain was take glacé cherries, really cheap alcohol, over whipped cream, and cheap, nasty chocolate. And by the time you mix all those together, you've actually got something which is very, very far removed from the original. Also, there's so much over whipped cream. And I'm not sure if Black Forest people eat Black Forest Gâteau in the States at all. But in Britain, it was one of those things that I grew up with that was always came out at a special occasion. And it was on a paper plate and it was frozen. And you associated it with weddings or birthdays, but no one ever ate it because it was awful.
Interestingly, what you've done in this book is go back and find the histories of these foods as they were actually developed and then present us with what should be the real recipe for something like a Black Forest cake.
Yeah, we actually went over to Baden-Baden in the Black Forest, which is the home of the Black Forest Gâteau, and went to a kirsch factory, and we went to see a pastry chef whose family had been making Black Forest Gâteau for years, and we went to the place that supposedly the original Black Forest Gâteau was made. And it was quite a different affair. So we came back with all of that information and sourced the best chocolate we could and the best cherries, and then we just set about making this cake. What's really interesting about making a lot of pastry works, actually, particularly cakes, it's quite similar to architecture. You need to look at it like as you would do building a house. So you've got to put all the thick, heavy, durable stuff on the bottom and all the really light stuff on top. Otherwise, when you cut into it, you end up with a bit of a squashed mess.
It's not going to stand up to the rigors of being served.
Yeah, exactly. And then we did a couple of interesting additions to the cake, and one of them was at the restaurant we've been serving these aerated chocolates. We've got a vacuum oven in the kitchen, and you suck the air out of the out of the oven, and the chocolate rises like a souffle, and then it sets, and you get these wonderful bubbles. And we put some mandarin essential oil in, so you get this explosion of mandarin flavour. But of course, this recipe has to be doable at home.
Right, and not many of us have that oven.
Exactly, so we set about with all the alternatives and we ended up with a vacuum cleaner and a Those sealable bags that you put your bed linen in when you want to store them for a few months.
Yeah.
Well, you melt the chocolate and put it into a Tupperware container, make a little hole in the top, pop it in one of these sealable bags, and then stick the nozzle of a powerful vacuum cleaner over the valve. And as it sucks the air out of the bag and the container, it sucks the chocolate up and it rises like a souffle. You then close the valve and leave it in the fridge, and you've got this wonderful aerated chocolate.
Wow, I bet that might even work.
Yeah, we broke a few containers on the way. I just don't want to be blamed for people ruining their vacuum cleaners. But if you do it proper, if you follow the instructions, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. I was also interested, you go back to something, obviously Black Forest cake, gâteau has some special thing in England. Roast chicken and potatoes, I think, is certainly universal in this country as well. And I was interested, first of all, you go to a lot of attention finding the very best free-range chicken you can find, and then testing which type of potatoes, it turns out, will roast the best. And now, obviously, the selection is going to be different in this country than you might get in England. But nevertheless, the technique that you say, this is how to go about finding out which one is the best, that's going to work anywhere.
Yeah, well, that was an amazing piece of information that we discovered. We went to see a company that analyzed potatoes. And you might think, oh, life's too short. Why on earth would you want to analyze a potato? It's just a potato. But potatoes that consist of something called dry matter, and dry matter is everything that's not water, basically. And if the dry matter is high, then the potato will roast well and be crisp. If the dry matter is low, it means it's got a lot of water in it, and then it's really hard to get crisp potatoes with low dry matter. So we then tested 30 plus varieties of potato that we knew the dry matter of, and we literally got, you know, when I explain this, I really do think I need to get out more often, because it sounds worse when I'm listening to the words coming out of my mouth. But we did find like a 1% band of dry matter where you get the most incredible potatoes. And I just think that...
So you found the Goldilocks potato, the just right potato.
We did. It was the magic potato, the holy grail of the spud.
I've always, but it sounds like this. This is an extension. You use, you describe yourself as a self-taught cook, but you use a lot of scientific method in your kitchen. It's funny, we ended up our previous conversation talking a lot about science in cooking.
Yes, actually, indeed, Jose Andres is spot on. When I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with him when he's talking about the fact that when we cook, there are physical and chemical reactions that happen, and it's not about going into the kitchen with a lab coat and a clipboard, but it just, if we can understand some of these reactions, it does make life in the kitchen easier and gives you more confidence. Also, it opens up a few more doors of sort of creativity and experimentation.
We're asking listeners today to call up with whatever it is that makes their comfort food special, that makes it a classic. Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And let's turn to Marcia. Marcia's with us from Chico in California.
Hi.
Hi.
And I haven't made this for quite a long time, but I'm always interested to hear if people have heard about it. When I was growing up in the Midwest, we had often for Saturday afternoon lunch what my mom called goldenrod eggs. And it's actually something that was such a comfort food, I made it for my husband when we were first married. I'm a cardiologist, so I don't make it very often now, but it was a white sauce, a kind of a medium white sauce made in the top of a double boiler. It had peanut butter added. I think it may have come out during the Second World War when protein was in short supply. Then you would chop up hard-boiled eggs, mix them in, reserve a little bit of the yolk, and then grate that on top, and it was served on either toast or cracker for Saturday afternoon lunch.
And called goldenrod eggs.
Goldenrod eggs.
Huh.
Every once in a while I run into someone who knows that.
And goldenrod, of course, is grows naturally, not just in the Midwest, but like a weed all over the country.
And the goldenrod only had to do with the egg yolk that the cooked egg yolk that was grated on top.
So it's like the famous egg cream, a drink that contains neither egg nor cream.
I think so.
Okay. I wonder, Heston Blumenthal, goldenrod eggs. Are we going to see that on the menu at the Fat Duck anytime soon?
I've definitely never come across them before. I'm just picturing tasting them, the mixture of peanut butter and egg. Is it quite Is it sweet? Is it quite sweet, or is it?
No, not really. And it would have been peanut butter without sugar, so it would be just a richer. You know, it was not. I didn't even know white sauce much other than with that, but it would have been a richer, you know, sort of thicker white sauce.
I was certainly really interested to try it. As I said, I've never come across it before.
And I haven't found recipes for it either.
Huh. Well, Marcia, we may have unleashed something we may all regret sometime soon.
But if Thank you.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're talking today with Heston Blumenthal. He is the author of In Search of Perfection, Reinventing Kitchen Classics, and proprietor of the Fat Duck Restaurant, which is located in Bray in Berkshire in England, voted last year the best restaurant in the world. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or Zap us an email, talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Betty. Betty's with us from the road in North Carolina. A lot of people traveling today.
Yes, my family had Thanksgiving in Charlotte and for lunch, and I just left, and I'm heading to Columbia, South Carolina to have another Thanksgiving.
Well, you drive carefully. We all know what that tryptophan can do to you.
Yes, yes. This is our comfort food, is mashed potatoes. But in our family, we also love deviled eggs. And I started doing something a couple of years ago, and it might not be so strange, but I put sour cream as well as the mayonnaise and mustard in my deviled eggs, and it was a huge hit.
Huh.
And I started trying to put sour cream. I put sour cream in my mashed potatoes, and they're great.
So the secret, I guess...
I never did that.
Betty's secret, Heston Blumenthal, is when in doubt, add sour cream.
Well, I have to admit something. Doing something as a kid, which you've just reminded me of, and I don't think I've ever shared this with anybody, so I'm...
I'm sorry?
I don't know if I've ever shared this next piece of information with anybody, not for years. When I was about 10, 12 years old, I used to love the combination of potatoes... sour cream, butter, horseradish, and a little bit of mayonnaise heated up.
Hmm.
So it doesn't sound too far removed from what you're talking about.
It really does add a very distinct, different flavor to them, especially the deviled eggs. It doesn't make them too tangy, but it gives them a different richness.
Yeah, yeah. And if there's any cardiologists in the audience, they can just start signing you up now.
Well, I'm thoroughly enjoying your show while I'm on the road, and you have a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you, and good one down and one to go, Betty, for you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to, this is Nikki. Nikki's with us from San Antonio. Hey, Nikki, you there?
Yes, sir.
You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
My favorite comfort food and what we've done to make it special is tuna noodle casserole, but along with all of your regular ingredients and your cheeses and everything, we add about a cup of mayonnaise, at least one full brick of cream cheese.
Wow.
And dill to taste.
Dill to taste.
Dill.
Now I don't know about you. I would not think of dill with tuna, Heston Blumenthal.
I stumbled across it by accident, actually, but it actually works very, very well.
Heston?
Well, dill is a quite a classic fish accompaniment, and does work very well. I can imagine it working very well, that dish.
Hmm.
It's very rich, though. It will clog your arteries if you eat it too often.
Yeah. I just go for more runs, go for more jogs.
Yeah, this is the day after Thanksgiving. It used to be the biggest shopping day in the year, but it certainly is the biggest day for everybody to start running.
Yes.
Nikki, thanks very much for the call. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Thank you.
Here's another. We heard about adding sour cream. My mother, writes David, my mother always told me everything tasted better when you added a stick of butter. Want a great turkey, he writes, smear a stick of butter on its skin. Want great mashed potatoes, add a stick of butter. In fact, if I was going to open a restaurant, I'd call it a stick of butter. Is that the genesis of the fat duck?
So we don't actually, we're not overly heavy on the use of butter, although I have to say, mashed potato with a really generous percentage of butter, you can't go wrong with that.
Now, when you're making mashed potatoes, do you mash them with a physical masher? Do you whip them? How do you do it?
But this is an interesting point. For the program, When we decided to tackle bangers and mash, I don't know if you know the term banger.
I lived in England for 4 years, so I'm quite familiar with the sausage known as banger.
Banger. It is a particular type of British sausage. Now, I thought, putting my gastronomic chef's hat on, okay, bangers and mash is going to be a wonderful, ethereal, silk-like potato puree with loaves of butter and a sausage, like a Toulouse-style sausage, which is more of a charcuterie piece. It's a real work of art. But when we started doing the program and tasting sausages, I realized that it just wasn't bangers and mash. And the mash needed to be, mashed potato needed to be not the wonderful silk-like puree that we make in the restaurant, but it needed to be slightly lumpy. So it's mashed but not completely pureed. Pockets. I don't know if you can imagine eating you the same effect with a baked potato, where you've got cold butter melting on the potato and you've got that mixture of the hot potato and the cold butter with this wonderful film of just slightly melting butter over the top. That is, and some black pepper, cracked black pepper and some grains of salt. That for me was just, I'm actually making myself hungry talking about it. But that is, it was interesting. There's no dictionary term or law as to what mash is, but it just seemed right to me that that's what I wanted for the bangers and mash.
He writes about all of these classic meals in a book called In Search of Perfection, Reinventing Kitchen Classics. Our guest, Heston Blumenthal, is also the proprietor of The Fat Duck. And In Search of Perfection, that's going to be a series on BBC TV?
Yes, it is. It's just started. It runs till Christmas.
Well, it'll be here soon. I have a strong feeling about that. Happy Thanksgiving, even though you don't know what it is, and we appreciate your time today. Good luck to you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Neil.
Heston Blumenthal joining us today from the BBC studios in Chelmsford, England.